All right, welcome back. Will you please join me in the serenity prayer? God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen. Please respect our speaker and silence your cell phones. Our speaker is being recorded with his or her permission. CDs can be purchased from Darren. I'd like to introduce this evening's speaker, Mike.
Mike, alcoholic. Welcome to the newcomers. Okay, here we go. Experience, strength, and hope. Luckily, I feel pretty comfortable. I know a lot of you in here. Welcome to our new San Clemente people and the newcomers. I think I said that already. I moved down here in 1971 at the age of 8 with my loving family, my mom, dad, brother, and baby sister. Father was a truck driver down in Capel Beach at Sierra Lumber. Mom was a housewife. Father liked to drink a lot of alcohol, ride motorcycles, and shoot guns, and go to the desert. And my mom was a really great enabler. So we had a great childhood. By the time I went to school here, it was in third grade. I was the fattest kid in school. Felt pretty insecure at the time. And then I hooked up with the... you can't really judge them, but they were, you know, the troubled kids. We cruised around town stealing shit out of your car, breaking windows, and stealing booze from the liquor store at a young age. And as time went on, by the time I was in sixth grade, you know, smoking cigarettes and experimenting with a little pot, and that didn't help me with my weight too much. Life was just, you know, going on. Like I said, my father was kind of a, not kind of, is a redneck. And still to this day, love him. Great guy. And it was weird. When we moved here, there wasn't that many people in San Clemente and Capel Beach. It was kind of country. No Mission Viejo, no Inland Empire. So it was kind of like, you know, you can go shoot your .22 over here off of Crown Valley and four-wheel drive out here behind the hills where Talega is. So we had a lot of fun drinking and doing a lot of weird things. By the time I got to high school, I quit smoking pot and joined a 12-step program called Overeaters Anonymous and lost about 80 pounds. So I was kind of like, felt like a new guy. Had my new body, and started drinking alcohol even more. So I kind of replaced the food with the booze, hanging out with the older brother, dad. About that time, got a kegerator, but they weren't called a kegerator then. They were just a big refrigerator with a CO2 bottle and a keg in there. And that's how he drank beer. And had all the neighbor people over. So it was just kind of like a normal thing, hanging out, drinking beer at the Christie's, and looking at motorcycles and playing with guns in the garage. And my poor mom had to put up with all this crap over the years. So by the time I got into high school, I was a daily drinker. And I started getting into trouble my sophomore year in high school. I got very drunk at my job at a pizza restaurant over here off Estrella and got in a confrontation with the liquor store owner who wouldn't sell me cigarettes, and a bunch of glass got broken, cops showed up, and I went to jail. And my dad was kind of figuring out, it's like, wow, maybe I should be drinking with my kid, maybe he can't handle it. So a little too late then, but I was like grounded for 3 months, got some great grades that semester in school. But it wasn't too bad because I had a keg outside my door because I lived in the garage. I could smoke, and it was kind of like, you know, whatever, I'll do homework, drink beer, and listen to Led Zeppelin. So as time went on, I kept getting arrested. And by the time I was a senior in high school, I'd already been arrested like 4 times. And I was sentenced to some AA meetings. And that was back in 1981, 82. And my first one was in this building. And it was a couple screwed up couches, and this place didn't look as nice as it did. And a bunch of old men hanging out, smoking and drinking coffee. And I had to come from Capitol Beach, so I drove here with my dad, and we drank a quart of beer on the way over. And I came in here, did my meeting, and went home, and did my court card thing, and went on my merry way. But I liked drinking. I wasn't much of a drug addict or a pot smoker, because pot made me paranoid and eat a lot, and since I had a weight problem, I didn't want to go there again. And as time went on, the weight did come back on, because I was drinking like, 24 beers a day through the whole day. So I kind of got some man boobs going, and I had a beer belly. You know, at the age of 21, I wasn't looking too good. Kind of like a pro fat wrestler, you know. At least I thought I did. I don't know, like I said, I had a great time drinking, and San Clemente and Capitol Beach was the place to do it. I feel sorry for the young kids today, because if you did half the stuff I did, you'd be in jail by now. I mean, throwing rocks at cars while you're drunk, I mean, you can't do that crap anymore. And get, and slap you on the hand. But let's get out of high school here. So, get out of high school, still living at home, really never figured out what I was going to do. I just knew I liked to be outside and drink and smoke. So I hooked up with a bunch of drug addicts from Laguna Beach who were stonemasons and brick masons and hippies. And I started mixing mud and humping block for those guys back in probably 1984. And unfortunately, I'm still doing the same thing, but these guys kind of really taught me how to drink in the morning and do a little this and do a little that so you can get through the day. Unfortunately, about time I hit 22, I think I had a nervous breakdown. I was pretty spun out from drinking every day. I mean, I was drinking 7 days a week and doing a little coke and a little speed to sober up. And that was the only way I can do that. And not only did I was spinning out emotionally, just spiritually, I was pretty dead. I was just lonely. Like I said, I had that pro wrestler body. And at 5'6", not too many women look at me because I was kind of bloated and red and emotionally retarded. I couldn't speak that well. Yeah, other than that, I was stellar. Back to feeling bad. I was just lonely. And everybody was kind of like moving forward in life. And I wasn't. And I looked at the friends that I grew up with, bad ones, and a lot of them were either mentally ill and homeless at the time. A couple of them had died on a motorcycle, and some have just moved on. So a lot of my old friends that I grew up with are no longer around. But, I'm 23, and I really had no plans. And I really hadn't accomplished anything. And I remembered this AA thing I got sent to when I was younger, when I was like 16. The OA thing worked for me with the food, and then I finally hit my bottom. I think I was in my parents' house normally. I didn't move out yet. I drank a bottle of gin. Parents were gone somewhere. I was watching pro wrestling. And I went in the bathroom and kind of had a talk with myself, kind of like, dude, you're 23 and you look terrible, and you got man boobs, and I'm blotchy, and It just wasn't working anymore. It wasn't fun. I wasn't having fun, you know, drinking my 12-pack on the bluff, looking at the waves, and hanging out with everybody. It was hanging out at a liquor store with a homeless guy because nobody wanted to hang out with me. And the only reason he was hanging out with me is because I had the booze. So, like I said, I remembered Alcoholics Anonymous, and I looked at my mom one morning after that night. I had that talk in the mirror with myself and asked my mom, I go, hey, you know, want to send me to rehab, you know, recovery place, you know, pine trees, swimming pool type thing. And my mom's a housewife, my dad's a truck driver, so it's like, yeah, right. And I had an aunt that was a hippie from San Francisco. She got sober in 1969, just a crazy lady, and she was sober like 15 years, and she was talking to my mom this whole time, going, one day he'll come and go, hey, I want help. And she said, just send him to an AA meeting. So there you go. My mom goes, no, just go to an AA meeting. So I did. I went to the Friendship Center in San Clemente at the Rainbow Sandal shop down there, which is no longer there, but it was a fun place. That's when they had real coffee cups and you could smoke, and you know, it was pretty nasty, but it was fun. And my first time around, got in there, I thought I had this thing. I got 3 months of sobriety, and I met her on a job site. It was Orange County DA's daughter. I had my new thin body because I lost like 30 pounds in 30 days from no beer. And I was laying stone at her house with another stonemason, and she was a blonde, kind of a Bette Midler, Madonna type girl, just crazy. And she drank like a fish, and we went to clubs every from Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday night, and I was sober, and we were just having a blast. Or she was. And and like I said, I'm an emotional retard when it comes to any type of relationship, especially women at this time. So I had no idea on how to deal with a crazy alcoholic Bette Midler Madonna chick. And it just didn't work out. The pain got really bad, and I didn't know how to deal with it because I wasn't working in a program. And I called my cousin who was in the program, and I was going, dude, I feel like I'm going to drink. And he goes, come on over. And I went over there, and he had a six-pack of Foster's, and he goes, let's party. So we partied. So evidently, he wasn't working a good program either. And he still isn't. So I stayed out for a whole other year. Kind of drank AA out of my head. And it worked. Until, God, I really don't remember my last drink. Yeah, I do. I was at an English pub bar over here and got really drunk, and they kicked me out, and I went home because I couldn't drive. Well, I couldn't find my car. And then I woke up the next morning and I was done after I found my car. And I went back to a meeting in Laguna Beach. I go, I'm going to try things differently. Too many old people here in San Clemente. So I headed down to Laguna Canyon. It's the Canyon Club, and a lot of young, crazy people there. We, again, could smoke and drink coffee and throw paper and shit at each other, and had a pool table there. So it was real fun, a lot of hot chicks. Scared to death. I walk in there, I go, God, look at all these people. Totally scared, insecure, still emotionally retarded. And I saw some guy that I knew. And I go, wow, that's Gene. And the last time I saw him was, I was his assistant left-hand man cook at the Chard House. And about 5 years before that, he threw a potato at me because I made it wrong on a Friday night, and it was really busy. And I grabbed him and dragged him out of the restaurant. I was going to beat him up. And then people stopped me and go, he's the cook. He can't do that. So he went back in there. I quit. And it was, you know, trauma and, you know, God at that time. And I looked at him and I go, what are you doing here? And he goes, I'm an alcoholic. And I asked him to be my sponsor. So a guy I wanted to beat up became my first sponsor. And it was a fun trip. I had a great time in my early sobriety. I hung out with a bunch of young people. Gene had a lot of character. He'd pick me up and we'd go to meetings. And we both smoked at the time. And he'd always be smoking his cigarette. He was really a spaz. He was always moving. He'd smoke his cigarette and ash his cigarette on me and go, you're a loser. And you'll never have as much time as I do. And I'm like, oh, what's up? Who cares? And when we had about 10 years, he went out for a day. One day, he went out. So I got more time than him. So, so I hung out with him and got to meet all his friends and his peers in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I basically, from the age of 23, grew up in these rooms. And it's been an awesome ride. I have went from Laguna. I moved out of my parents' house with 10 days of sobriety. I told my mom and dad I got to go. They hated to see me go because I was, you know, taking mom out to lunch once a week, flipping dad $100 and a six-pack. And he was actually losing his little drinking buddy. So I go, I got to split. I can't stay sober here. Rented a house in San Clemente above the high school with an ocean view. And I had a sober roommate, and my journey of sobriety began. Went to a meeting every single day. I got Gene, who told me to wake up in the morning and hit your knees. He doesn't care who I'm praying to, as long as I have my knees and turn my will and my life over to care of God as I understand Him. I still do that today. He goes, I need you to read out the big book, a paragraph, a page, it doesn't matter. And my little black book, one day at a time, that, and I've still been doing it. I've been doing that for almost 24 years now. And that's what he told me to do. And then I fired Gene after something, who knows, maybe it was the last loser cigarette butt thing. We got another sponsor, Tom Whalen, some old codger, who's still alive. Great guy, real simple, but to the point. And worked my steps with him. Did a thorough 1, 2, and 3. When I sponsor my guys and I talk to them, and I think number one, step one is probably the only step you need to get absolutely right in this program. For me, deep down inside, I'm an alcoholic. For me to drink, maybe to die, who knows, maybe to live another 50 years and have the life of my father, but knowing my life isn't that well, and live an existence of non-spirituality and emotional retardism, I mean, I'll get back to that later with my brother. But my point is, step one, you need to get right. Either you know you're an alcoholic and for you to drink is not the choice you need to make. And step two, I came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. And what has been taught to me in this program, restoring me to sanity, is my ability to realize, for me right now to think, to go, you know what, I think I can drink right now. I've been sober 23 years, 10 months. I could probably do it. I've done a lot of emotional growth here. And then really convince myself that I can do that. That's an insane thought. Because I've been coming here for 23 years and 10 months, and I see people come here with 20 years, 5 years, 6 months, thinking they can drink. They have that insane thought that comes into their head, or some pain rolls in and they don't want to work through it and go, yeah, I think I can do it. Or I don't give a shit. I feel bad for them, but they keep me sober, and I believe they keep a lot of us sober. Because we see the pain they go through, and they come back, and hopefully get this thing. So I need to realize that God's going to restore me to sanity and keep my sanity to know that I don't think I can drink again. And then that step three is what I do every morning. I get up in the morning, I turn my will and my life over to care of God as I understand Him. I have a really close relationship with my higher power. I find a lot of peace and quiet and serene. Because of this program, I do have that relationship with my higher power. And step four, you know, it's just that inventory. I just did step four with one of the guys I work with. Right? That's real easy. Just write this shit down. That's it. Don't even think about reading it to anybody. Just write it down. And it's not that hard. It's those columns right there. Resentments and this and that, and we'll figure it out later. So I personally did that. Did my fifth with my sponsor. No big deal. A few little secrets. Oh well. As you come to these meetings, you're going to hear people sharing about how many people I killed, how many people I molested, and what banks I've robbed. Really don't care. So do your fourth and your fifth. It's no big deal. The big deal is step six. step six is our character defects. We make a list of them. And unfortunately, when I did my list the first time around, I had like maybe one or two things there. I'm kind of going, you know what? I'm kind of a great guy. I'm lean. I work hard. What more do you want? And at this particular time, I was not in a relationship. So my step six was real easy. As time went on, I met my wonderful wife of 22 years in Alcoholics Anonymous at the Tuesday night beach meeting. Who I'm still with. A lot of you know her. Step six. So, as time goes on, step six, I've redid my character defects, and as time goes on, this is a really tough step. And it's really tough to explain to people on how to deal with step six. We can ask God, it says in step seven, we ask God to relieve our character defects. I did that, but they keep coming back. And if you want to be in any type of relationship, work, brother, family, mother, sister, wife, husband, we have to be aware of what's going on. And I think this program teaches us how to be aware if we're willing to do that. I myself want to feel good, and I want to grow emotionally and spiritually in this program. I just don't want to hang out and just stay physically sober. I want to get as much as I possibly can out of this thing. So I found out I have quite a few character defects. And about 3 or 4 years ago, I gave my wife permission to help me with that. And I asked her, at any time, any place, any character defect, to let me know. I wouldn't recommend anybody doing this until you're ready. Because it's not a like, okay, I take that back. But what it did is it changed my perception, not only with my wife, but with my coworkers, my brothers, mom, dads, whoever I have a relationship with. They can come to me if something's bothering them or if one of my character defects is kind of shooting out there. especially my wife is my biggest helper since I'm with her, I sleep with her, eat with her, and live with her. She's the one who I'm probably going to strike out at the most with a character defect, but as an example, I don't want to walk around in my life walking on people and treating people like shit. I can do that and not even know it, especially to the ones I love the most. This program has taught me through step 6 on how to be a more loving and kind person. And I think that's what we all want here. Because before I was pretty much a selfish, self-loathing pig. Drank like a pig, ate like a pig, and acted like a pig. And I no longer want to be that way. So step 6 is very important to me. And like I said, my wife helps me out with that a lot. Quick, for instance, at a restaurant, I talk to the waitress. My wife will leave, like, you know what? You're an asshole to her. And I'm like, wow, really? I had no idea. Do I owe her an amends? And she goes, no, just be nice. And I mean, that made me feel like, okay, great. Thanks, babe. You helped me out. Most of the time, my response isn't that. Thanks, babe. You helped me out. Because like I said, it's so hard. You think getting sober is easy? Keeping your mouth shut after asking somebody to help you out is very tough. So we'll move on from that. Step 6, very hard. 8, making amends. Like I said, I worked very hard from a very young age because I liked to drink. My parents didn't have any money. And if I stole my dad booze, he'd know about it. Plus, I helped him with buying the keg so I could drink it. But when I was on my own, I was very fearful because, you know, I lived at my parents' house till I was 23. Now I got this house up on the hill. I'm renting with a buddy. Making amends, I really didn't steal that much stuff. The financial amends, I really didn't acquire that much stuff because I really didn't. I spent it all on alcohol in my pickup truck, putting gas in it to drink and drive and go to work. So the amends thing wasn't too hard, except for the emotional amends I had to make to my mom, dad, you know, brothers, sisters, for all the emotional and driving my mom completely crazy. Because every night I went out, she goes, please don't drink. And I come home drunk every night, driving in or winding up naked on the front yard, clothes everywhere, or in jail, come and get me. So I wouldn't want to wish that on any parent. I have a daughter that's 30 years old. Thank God she wasn't like me. But we had our issues. But she's doing well. But again, the emotional amends that I needed to make, I made them. I had a tough one to do with my aunt. I burnt her kitchen down one night in a drunk. I threw 6 hard-boiled eggs in a pot and fell asleep. And they caught on fire, and it caught the cabinet on fire, and the house smelt like burnt eggs, and I blamed it on my cousin. He did. And I got away with it. And I had to make an amends to my cousin and to my aunt, because he was in a blackout, and he didn't remember if he did it or not. So, just shit like that, you know? I don't have that today. I don't have that today. So the amends, that's my list. I skipped step 8, but that's step 9. Making the list, if you're new and you're a newcomer, just do these stupid steps because they're a wonderful way of life. They're actually a wonderful tool. You know, AA kind of gives you the toolbox. You know, you got your box, you got your steps, which are the tools. To, you know, slowly build your character and your moral and everything to get through life. Because before this, I basically had a hammer, you know, to cook a fried egg with, you know, and that's how I went through life. It's just difficult and frustrating. And I didn't know any better. It's just me and my hammer, you know. Let's work on the car. And everything was just frustrating. But again, step 8, you make your list, go do your amends, talk to your sponsor first before you go do that so you don't screw anybody else up. You can get into that later. That's step nine. And then basically, if you're new, you're done. Get your first nine steps done. It's that easy. And then that spiritual little awakening miracle happens. That little light starts shining and you feel the program in your life. You get this little moment of not thinking of yourself 100% of the time and start thinking of others. It's like, oh, yeah, there's other people on this planet. And then that's when you start feeling good. Then you got step 10 and 11, you know, your maintenance steps. And I think they should throw 6 in there, too, because those stupid character defects never go away. They just get a little better. You know, and today I go home. I lay down in bed and I kind of take an inventory of my day. And sometimes I own amends next day in the morning. And it's kind of a nice relief to get that stuff out of the way. And I was just reading the other day out of step study. It's not only making the amends if we hurt somebody during that day. It even talks about the morbid thoughts that we have. That we need to inventory. For some reason, being an alcoholic, I learned this in counseling just recently, that not only alcoholics, but in our brain, you got a lower part and you got your upper part. And that lower part is the fight and flight type of mechanism of the brain. It takes about 90 seconds for it to get to the top. And that's where all that negative thinking is. So when I wake up in the morning, it's that either fight or flight caveman thing. And that's why I wake up and I feel like, what the fuck? Oh, God, what's going on today? You know, that fear. Oh, shit. And then that's why I think in AA they go hit your knees first thing in the morning. Your day, God, not mine. I'm just rowing the boat. You're steering it type of thing. You know, and it works. That 90 seconds finally flows up to my upper brain and going, okay, I'm okay. I'm just in my room on my knees praying. Okay, I can go to the bathroom and get my coffee now. I'm not going to get eaten by a lion. And it's so true. When that guy said that to me, my whole perception of like, okay, maybe I'm not so fucking weird. You know, am I the only one that freaks out every morning when I wake up? Evidently not. And they talk about restraint from pen and tongue. That's that lower part of your brain. Hey, Mike, you're an ass. You can literally get up here and beat me up or respond, or you just sit there and think about it for a minute and go, yeah, okay, maybe I am. You know, I mean, it helps to shut your mouth. That I've learned in Alcoholics Anonymous. Because my pride and my ego is in my caveman lower part of my brain. So that is something else I've learned in this program. I mean, AA is just like unbelievably a perfect way for me to live. Teaches you how to clean house, love God, whoever that is to you, love others, you know, and try to keep a positive attitude in life, you know? I don't know. Where was I? Lower part of the brain. How much more time do I got here? 15 minutes? Okay. I'll figure out something. Step 10. Inventory. I mean, yeah. Daily inventory. So, that's what I was on anyways. Step 10. So that's what I do. Go to bed, think about my day, check out my morbid thoughts, not take myself too serious, thank God for another sober day, and go to bed. And I go to sleep like this, and I wake up like that. God has blessed me with sleep. I get to sleep 7 hours a day. I don't move. It's a wonderful thing, and I think it's a gift from God and Alcoholics Anonymous. Because I talk to a lot of people in this program that can't sleep. Step 11, prayer and meditation. At first, this was very tough for me because I didn't read or write when I got into Alcoholics Anonymous, because I was a little busy smoking pot and drinking beer, through grammar school and high school. So I had to learn and read and write when I got here. Luckily, I met a wonderful lady who was a teacher and had a master's in English, so she kind of helped me out. So I started had the ability to read some spiritual and meditation books and learned a lot on that. And then I kind of got past that stage. I just basically stick with my AA literature, and I got another little book I read in the morning and I read at night. And that's prayer and meditation. To me, I wake up, sit there for about 20, 30 minutes, trying to figure out what God's will is for me or what's my will. Let me give you an example. I've sit on my couch, having my coffee, my wife's sitting there doing her thing, praying to God, thinking, talking to Him, okay, your will, God, not mine. My wife gets up, she's doing her thing, and she's getting ready for work. And I don't know if you guys know my wife. She's got like 9 bags, her lunch, her workout, her coffee, this, that. And I'm sitting there meditating, being all Christ-like. And I look at her. And I go, what a schmuck. Look at all that crap she's got to carry out. And I go, it's cold. Whatever. I'm in Mike's thought. Kind of Mike's will there. And a thought popped over my head, like, why don't you help her out to the car? And then I kind of had this, like, a, you know, kind of like moment of clarity. Like, God's thought, you know. So that's how different my thought and God's thoughts are. And I could do that through the whole day. Be of love and service or be of Mike and service. And when I realize where I'm at, if I am frustrated, tired, angry, whatever, and things aren't going my way, I am more than likely not in God's will. And I am not doing what I'm supposed to do, be of love and service. And that is one thing that Tom Whalen and Stacy Stallone had beaten into my brain over 20 years. It's real simple. Suit up, show up, and be of love and service. That's what this whole program's all about. It's about others and not about you. And I think that's the true meaning of happiness. Because I've been around here long enough to know when I'm miserable, I'm thinking about Mike Criskey. And when I'm having a good time, I'm pretty much working with others, trying to do something, be of service, and doing it through God's will, not mine. Because my will is basically sitting around watching some UFC, eating a pizza, leave me alone, and that's it. Nothing wrong with that, but I could do that 24/7. That's another form of meditation. But I think it's the wrong form of meditation. I don't know if you foodies out there can relate with me, but maybe some heroin addicts can. But when you're sitting in front of a big pizza or a plate of spaghetti, it's like 12 minutes of complete meditation bliss. I'm thinking of absolutely nothing except that meatball and that spaghetti. So sometimes that's the only way I can get some relief. But step 12, love and service. Let's think. I tell a lot of guys that I work with, you know, you got to be of love and service by just showing up, being in the seat. You could have 10 days, and the guy sitting next to you has got 2. He's going to relate more to you than to me, because I know I didn't want to talk to anybody that had more than 30 days when I had 5 days. So you guys, the newcomer, you are of service. Not only are you service to the newer comer, but you're truly of service to us older guys that have been here for a while, because you guys are truly the lifeblood of this program. I've been in other programs where there aren't newcomers. It's kind of like you're there and everybody's there for 5 or 6 years and you just look at each other and go, is this it? So when you guys are here, we love you. Keep coming back. Because we truly need you to stay sober ourselves. Because if you're not here, we're screwed. I got to hang out with guys like him and him. And I know their story. So it's always good to hear a new story because it keeps me sober. And not only that, you guys bring up some great stuff. Some of the stuff out of your mouth amazes me. And in a good, positive way. So, but service to me, too. For the older guys, I think a lot of times that's where it can take me out if I'm not of service. One, working with other people, but even in my own community of being of service, no matter what it is. Help my neighbor, helping a family member. Because I am an alcoholic, I pretty much am pretty important. I don't have time for you. So I'm glad this program teaches me that, die to my pride and I'm just a little guy. I need to be of service because it makes me feel better. I don't want to get all spiritual on you and shit like that, but, you got to die to yourself to win in this game. So I don't know. I'm running out of stuff to say, but you know what? I had a great time. I love all you guys, and Mike, thank you for asking me to share. And if we're not ready, we can say a big, long-ass prayer after the meeting. How's that?